What on earth is that thing I'm wearing?
This is a tanuki suit.
A tanuki suit? Of course! Because of all the fallout from the Mushroom Kingdom Wars. What would you say is the hardest video game you've ever beat?
Beat?
Yeah.
Metroid Prime 2 Echoes is up there. What else? I kind of reached a point in my life where I just quit games that I can't beat. What
That's
about you?
That's the spirit, kids. If it's too hard, give up.
What about you, though?
Tom, I recently just beat Cuphead.
That's right. You sent me a picture, and I was like, "Oh, he's so good."
Yeah, you didn't respond to my achievements though.
I was cool. In the midst of a Magfest haze, so when I saw that, I was like, "That's so cool," and then I forgot to respond to it.
Oh my god, it was so hard. The coolest thing with Xbox is they can actually it tracks the amount of hours that you've played a game. And the game's not long at all. There's like 20 boss battles in the whole game, but like majority of the game is boss battles. It took me 18 hours to beat that game.
Okay.
Almost 5 hours was on the final boss itself.
Jeez.
Yeah. And I was like, this game isn't better than me. I've made it this far now. Like, and it did the classic, I wouldn't say classic, but it did the Castlevania 64 thing to me, where I played through it on easy mode, and you get to the end of the game, and it's like, all right, well, you can't continue any further until you boost up the difficulty. And I was like, wait, what?
Rude.
And it's the same thing that happens in Castlevania 64. You get to a certain part in the game, and it's like, hey, you can't continue any further until you go back and play it on normal difficulty now. So you have to go through and replay everything you just did, and now everything's 4, 5, 6 times harder than it previously was. And it sucks.
It's a game that forces you to get good.
But I did it, and I've been going around and I've been bragging to everybody recently. I'm like, listen, I beat Cuphead. I'm a part of the 2.33% of the people in the world that got that achievement for beating Cuphead. Like,
hey. And now you're bragging on the podcast. So
I am.
Mission
so
complete.
Now everyone can hear me say, I beat Cuphead.
Say it again.
I beat Cuphead.
Ooh. Say it again.
So how was Magfest?
Magfest was a lot of fun, as usual. I was a lot more responsible this year, except on the night that you texted me about Cuphead. But no, it was pretty cool. I went to some cool panels. I went to a panel on accessibility and game design, which was about like how we can make games for people with certain disabilities in more creative ways, you know. I like learned that there is actually like a blind player who's pretty famous on Reddit because he knows how to play games like Battlefield 1 just by the sound design itself, and I thought that was pretty incredible. So yeah, the whole panel was just like, how can games work harder to be more inclusive, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Were the guys from Able Gamers there?
No, the Game Chasers were there.
Oh, that was cool.
Xavier Woods was there. I really wanted to see him, but the line was like an hour and a half long, and I was like, I don't want to see Xavier Woods that much.
Yeah. No, it's weird that Able Gamers wasn't there, because Able Gamers, they're the company that goes ahead and makes like special controllers for people who have disabilities.
Okay.
So I was surprised that they didn't work together on that panel.
Hmm. The people who put the panel on, I actually know one of them. His name's Dan, and he is the founder of Winterian Studios. And so, like, they're kind of like an independent game studio that's interested in, like, design aspects and stuff like that. Like, they design their own games and also kind of, like, produce content about design. So, yeah, they were just looking into accessibility.
Okay, that's really cool.
But yeah, picked up some cool swag and saw some cool music. Yeah, it's a great time.
Nice. And speaking of a great time, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh, and he's the toad to my dry bones.
That's me, Tom, and all these Mario puns can only mean one thing.
We're going to be talking about Super Mario Brothers 2, right?
I wish we were talking about Super Mario Brothers 2. No, we're talking about Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just talking about the wizard, though, right?
I wish we were just talking about the wizard. No, we're talking about the game that the wizard was made to sell.
Oh. Are you sure this isn't the game that was made to sell the wizard?
That's a very poor marketing strategy. That's what the intention was. Fun fact about the wizard, I watched it like in full for the first time as an adult in 2015 with my cousins, and you know, we were all like, all of us were ragging on it for like, you know, it's the cheesy, poorly aged movie that it is, this whole thing's just a big commercial, this is all like bad movie, blah blah blah. But when it's at the end of the movie and the siblings get to the Carazone or the Corazon dinosaurs. I just saw those things last year, but I don't even know how to pronounce what they were. But they get to the dinosaurs from Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and the brother goes up in the dinosaur, and he's like, I just wanted to leave the family picture here, because this is the last time we were all happy, is when we saw these dinosaurs. And my cousin Lindsay legit started crying. She's like, that's so sad. We're like, it's the wizard. It's not supposed to cause tears. This is a bad movie. She's like, no, it's so sweet. And that, kids, is why film is subjective.
Yep.
But anyway, yeah, today we're talking about a game closely tied to that movie, Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yes. Super Mario Brothers 3 was, once again, developed by Nintendo. What?
Did we talk about Nintendo too much on this podcast?
I don't think we do. Not
enough. Does it matter?
It doesn't. It doesn't. No. You know it got that seal of approval. Of course, produced by Shigeru Miyamoto.
Bay.
And it was released February 12th, 1990.
Ooh, that's a couple days from today, day you're listening to this.
Almost 30 years old, celebrating its 29th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I can tell you, it's a game.
It is a game.
Yep.
Josh, how do you feel about this game?
This game is one of those games that's constantly gets brought up in the best games of the NES.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's either between Mario Brothers 3 and Legend of Zelda. This game is still, I think, to this day, fantastic. It is what every side-scrolling Mario game pretty much has become. Like, It's shown a lot of the, you know, the overworld where you can go and pick your levels and do this and move here, and you have secret ways that you can go to this one, and then you have the little mini games inside of it. It's kind of like they could have just went and made another sequel to the original Super Mario Brothers, which they did when they released the Lost Levels, but they took that idea and just kind of expanded on it and almost made it like an open world Mario game. I think there's been so many things that were created in this game that has been constantly used in other Mario games, whether it be certain characters that constantly keep coming back. Like I said, the hidden levels. We also have side-scrolling levels where the level moves for you. You know what I mean? The auto-scrolling levels. We didn't have those in any of the previous Mario games. This game got it, and now there's always been 2D Mario games where the level's been moving by itself for you.
Right. I understand what you're saying, yeah.
A lot of the power-ups that we've come to love, other than the fire mushroom, you have the Tanuki suit, you have the Hammer Bros suit, you have the leaf itself. All these came back up in more recent games as well, so
I think, Josh, what you're trying to just overall say is that this is a kind of benchmark for what Mario was at the time and what Mario has continued to be. Like, it's a bar that if other games in its lineage didn't rise up to it, they were at least influenced by this game. Is that right? What you would overall package this as?
Yeah, and it's really hard to talk about Mario 3 and say things that haven't already been said. Hmm. Because, I mean, if you see any YouTube channel out there or talk about or listen to any podcast out there, everyone sooner or later will talk about Mario 3. And the reason I wanted to actually talk about it was because, Tom, you've never played Mario 3.
No, this was the first time I played it beginning to end to completion and not just in scattered one-shots at, like, my cousin's house when I was 5.
I probably played through it maybe about 5-6 times through World 1 all the way up to World 8.
Mm-hmm.
And this here, just replaying it, man, it's just, it's so good. Like, there are some issues with it, which we can get into then when we're talking about the actual levels to the game, but this is just a great game, and it holds the test of time. Like, I don't know. It's just a great game. So what were your impressions on it? Because this is what I'm most interested to hear.
Okay. I'm going to put some body armor on, and I'm going to hide in a little steel bunker here. Hold on, I got to shut the door. Tighten the lock. Okay. This game's just all right. Okay. I appreciate the context this game has in gaming history, but I personally do not think it's a top-tier Mario side-scroller, and I don't personally think it's aged very well. I don't think it's a bad game. I had fun with it, but it does some things that I didn't enjoy. It has a couple things that, in terms of the Mario series, I outright do not enjoy. And I don't know, like, I get what it did, and I get its impact. It very much, like you were saying, is a benchmark in the series. But I think this has been done better, and overall, this game's kind of, you know, it's important to play, but overall, I was just like, eh, all right. And sometimes just like, eh, no thanks. But I don't know. I don't want this to be salt, but I am going to just say that we're probably going to have a differing opinions throughout the rest of this episode.
No, and that's fine.
Of the three on the NES, like, I'll be honest with you. So I think Super Mario Bros. 2, which technically everyone knows it's not even really a Mario game, but honestly, in not even really being a Mario game, I think it's more innovative than 3. And I don't know. I think everything that 3 does is fine. But, like, Super Mario World took everything that 3 did and did it better. So it's kind of like, I think 3 is historically important, but it was improved on by its children, quote-unquote, which is, like, some people would be like, well, that's a dumb argument to make. Of course, games that come later will be better. But, like, you know, it really did. Like, Super Mario World, for me, is the definitive side-scrolling Mario adventure. But on the NES era, like, 2 did so many cool and unique and colorful things that 3... doesn't follow up on entirely, because 3 is trying to be a little bit more of an expansion on 1. It takes a couple things, but not enough, I think, and that bummed me out. So yeah, from where I'm at, it's fine, but I personally can't gush.
Do you think it is because it took you almost 29 years to play the game?
I really don't know, because I have in recent adult years played a lot of, like, classic games that I missed out on in my childhood, and some I've been like, wow, this is good and it's held up and it's aged really well, and then in some cases I'm like, this was probably fine at the time, but I think that, you know, this is more of like a historical footnote than an all-timer. So you know, it varies from time to time, but we can get into it, you know, we can get into it if you want to go beat by beat.
Yeah, okay. So let's jump right into it. So we started off in Grass Island, which kind of has your most simplistic levels in the game.
Yeah.
So let's start off. What did you think of the music?
The music's great. I cannot fault this game for its soundtrack. It is delightful. You know, all of the tunes in here and the standards, even like the sound effects, are just so fun. Like, and they're great. I won't fault that for a second.
What I love about this, too, is it doesn't have the original song in the game. And that's one thing, the original Mario Brothers theme.
Oh, the do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's one great thing about a lot of Mario games. Like, some of the newer ones have it just to kind of, you know, pay respect to the older games. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them never reuse the music.
No, they develop their own theme that identifies the game, you know?
But every single one has been great. Like, Super Mario Brothers 1 has the most, you know, iconic video game music ever, I think. Super Mario Brothers 2 had its...
Yeah.
This one was great. Even Super Mario Worlds was so good. Like, even Yoshi's Island had distinct music when it came to it. Like, I just love that every time that they create a theme song for Mario, or, like, what this game should sound like, it fits the tone perfectly.
You know what I like about this game's music? When we were humming along right there... we were being like, we were at a fast pace because one and two, you know, they had fast paced music. What I honestly like about three, the music of the first world stage you can select in this game, it's honestly pretty chill. It's like dun 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 dun. It's like you're not in a rush.
Yeah,
you're just enjoying it, you know. And it's like,
that's one great thing too, because like you were saying, that song is a little bit more relaxed. Mm-hmm. Which with this game, you have the ability to go forwards and backwards and up and an under and stuff like that. You can explore in this one, kind of. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have 300 seconds to do it, but you can explore in this game, and there's secrets everywhere. You can actually get to World 8 by only playing like 4 or 5 levels in the entire game.
Right.
Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. So the music kind of puts you in a mood to kind of guide how you explore the game, which we've seen Nintendo do many times over the years. You know, the Breath of the Wild's entire sound design is kind of informed by how you explore the world. Even non-Nintendo games, you talked about the sound design in Limbo and how it changes or swells or dims based on how you're exploring. So yeah, this is kind of like a very innovative use of music.
What'd you think of the mini games that you get to play around with?
Well, you know, most of them are hosted by Toad, so obviously they're great. They're the best parts of the game. You know, the cards are fun. The choosing the chests, it's fun. You know, it's simple, but it's fun. It's fine.
Yeah.
So you're talking about exploring. You're talking about finding these maps. So I'm not a fan of world maps in the Mario series. What I mean by that is just that, like, I feel that they're restrictive even when they give you the feeling of freedom. Like, okay, in this game, there's diverging paths along the world map, so you can like walk around a kingdom in a couple different unique ways. But I don't know, my first Mario game was Super Mario 64, so like that game kind of really instilled a love of hub worlds for me, just the freedom of moving around. So like Mario 64, Mario Sunshine, Mario Galaxy, like I love when there's a good hub world where I can just walk around it and explore it and then fall into levels as I find them. Mm-hmm. With this, where it's just like three, I feel like because it's the first one that had the world map, and honestly it kind of popularized world maps in gaming, it just set a standard that I don't personally fully enjoy. I mean, in world, I guess I don't dislike it, but as it went on, I remember when the new Super Mario series came out, and that's all it was just the world map, you know? Like, I felt like it was so, it made it feel linear, so I don't know, I don't care for the world map concept. And in this game, I just want to say, when you game over, and it kicks you back, like, past several completed levels for game overing, it was so heartbreaking. Like in the Desert Kingdom, when the sun would kill me over and over again because the sun would kill me, and it was like, oh, you gamed over, we're gonna knock you back a bit, so you have to redo a bunch of like levels again. I was always like, ah, like I felt like I was being punished, you know? Like,
right.
I don't know, I didn't dig that.
So I'll need to show you one day how to get 99 lives in this game, because that's what I did. I went to world 3-4. And just loaded up, got the 99 lives, and then continued on my way.
Is it a glitch or
there's a certain sequence that you can do with one of the clouds that spit out the little spinies that kind of go back and forth. Mm-hmm. There's a way that you can kick a Koopa shell, and it constantly keeps bouncing back and forth in between two blocks. And when he hits it down there, it'll keep building up the point system, and you'll keep getting one ups from it. And then you just let the time run out, and then you go back and do it again, and then you can get the rest of the lives that you need.
Mm, okay.
But yeah.
I mean, granted, I was playing this on the Switch. I could have just abused the reload.
The system. Save states, yeah.
I was trying not to.
But, no, I understand. You know, play it purist.
Yeah, purist. We don't have to talk about the map all day, though, Josh. What brings out the joy in this game for you?
We have the introduction of Boo Diddley.
Ooh, I love my boy Boo. So, yes, bless this game for giving me Boo.
We got my boy Drybones.
Mm-hmm. We got the Koopalings, the first time they were introduced.
Yep. Larry, Morton, Wendy, Iggy, Roy, Lemmy, Ludwig. All of them are there. Even Boom Boom. Boom Boom, he's not even a Koopa kid, but like he deserves some love.
I want to write a Jingle All the Way-esque movie where instead of having to like name all the reindeer, you have to name all the Koopalings like Arnold Schwarzenegger does.
As he's running down the street.
Yeah.
You also have Big Bertha being introduced into this game.
Was she?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
And then the Thwomps.
Okay, yep.
Big old rock people with faces.
Iconic pains in the ass, yes.
Yeah. But it's so crazy, though. Like, these characters here, they're constantly being brought up into other Mario games. I mean, you figure they had levels based on Boo in Mario World.
Yeah.
They had ghost houses. Like, just crazy to think how just these characters here...
Dry Bones isn't Mario Kart now. He's a superstar.
Exactly.
Dry Bones will get into Smash before Waluigi does.
Probably. But it's just so crazy, though. Like, all of these iconic characters are, like, they started here. Yeah. And they're still in it. The Koopa Kids are in Smash Brothers.
That's true. I think it's just a testament to, like... So this was towards the latter end of the NES's life. And I feel like at this point, they had figured out a lot of ways to be more creative with the hardware and the software. Because for a lot of games... in this era, where like you saw more impressive color schemes, more impressive designs, and so just seeing like Nintendo apply their heavyweight mascot to a title that had this much, you know, ingenuity in it was really cool. Really cool. Like the box art, you know, describes this as the biggest Mario Brothers adventure yet, and you can't deny that at all. Like the amount of stuff they pack into this and the amount of unique characters, it's very impressive for the time.
Yeah. And you can't deny it, and I hope you don't, but you said that your game's kind of underwhelming for you, right? This is probably one of the best-looking NES games made.
Oh, sure. I wouldn't deny that, yeah.
The graphics to this and just the way that everything is just so much smoother. You compare this to Mario 1, and you can just see, I mean, a world of a difference.
I will say, and I'm not trying to say this to be a naysayer, I like the character sprite designs in Super Mario Bros. 2 better. I find them a little bit more pleasing, but this is like a technically impressive game, graphics-wise.
Yeah. So we talked about the Koopa Kids and stuff being inside of Smash Brothers, Tom. What was your overall take on fighting them?
Like, not trying to be completely negative. It's just like, it's the typical Mario pattern of like, observe their behavior, jump on them three times. And that's cool. You know, each of them had a little unique gimmick to them, which was neat. That usually complemented their design. So yeah, that was fun. I think there were more challenging bosses in this game, honestly, or more bosses that put the fear of God in me, like, you know, the angry sun. Now I get all those jokes about people being like, oh, that sun, when it comes after you in Mario, it's terrifying. And I always be like, I don't get this. But now I get it. And now I get it.
One of my least favorite villains in the entire game were the Patooies.
Oh.
And those are the piranha plants that walk on the ground that shoot the spiked balls in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Because their patterns were so unpredictable at times.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you'd wait for it to go up three times. Sometimes it was two times. And then it was two times and then three times. And it's just like, ugh. You just couldn't figure it out. Of course, Hammer Brothers are always just the bane of my existence when it comes to Mario games in general. They're just always the biggest issue.
And how they can surprise you on the map.
Yes.
Which, you know, it adds to the challenge. You know, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you feel, if we're talking about challenge two a bit, how did you feel about the mechanics of three? Like, let's talk about kind of the move sets and the ways of controlling Mario that this game introduced. You had the accelerated running and jumping meter on the bottom for the first time ever. Like, running was a significant portion of the game. And the long jumps, you know, that could be make or break in certain levels. That also factored into, like, the Leaf upgrade. Running and jumping would give you flight for a little bit. So aside from like Peach's ability to float in Mario 2, this was like the first game that gave you like controllable flight.
Yeah, I thought it was great because that's something you kind of see that they've moved into more of the newer games. Actually, I don't even think you could do that in Odyssey. You can only like jump into things that wouldn't be able to fly for a short period of time.
Yeah.
But I don't know... I was thinking about that too. I don't know if I like the raccoon or Tanuki Sue more than the cape in Super Mario World, because with this, it's just get your momentum up to your P and then fly up. Mm-hmm. And then you can fly for a short amount of time. In Super Mario World, it was you had to build your momentum, you had to jump up, but then you had to do like a weird like button configuration to kind of like go with the air itself inside the game. And you can stay airborne a much longer time. You can probably fly through an entire level that way. But I feel like that's just a little bit more annoying compared to using the raccoon or Tanuki suit.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. With the cape, you had to dive and then kind of rise again. I don't know. I personally think that's pretty cool. And I also like how the cape is also has like reflecting options built in. But we're not talking about Super Mario World. I won't be on that forever. there's also you can slide down slopes in this game, which... Yep. Can create some really creative enemy destroying combos if you time it right.
Yeah, there was a lot of just creativity that you can do in this game. Hmm. And that's like I was saying, even to the point where you can jump in a giant shoe. You could be, you know, a frog and swim in the world.
Yes, the frog suit does make swimming a lot easier.
But if you're outside of the water, then it's...
You jump higher.
The worst thing in the entire world. You have the P-Wing that you can get from Princess Peach, which allows you to stay airborne and fly through an entire level if you wanted. It would only last one level. But these are just little, like, bonuses that you can have. It can completely change it. Like, oh, I need to get into this. I know there's a secret up in this top part here. I can't build enough momentum to run up there. So I'm just going to activate the P-Wing, fly up there when I get to that part in the level. Hopefully not get hit in that time frame, but... Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I think for when this came out and, you know, to this day, it's still one of the best Mario games. I'm not going to say it's the best Mario game because we all know what the best Mario game is.
Yeah, it's Super Mario 64.
No, it is
JK,
not.
JK, it's literally
Super Mario World.
For me, it's between Galaxy and Odyssey right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But
anyway.
Yeah, anywho. So, okay, we talked a lot about the kind of, like, building blocks of this game, but let's talk kind of about, like, the big picture, I guess, the scope of this game. So, like, what's the story in the presentation, Josh? Because I think that matters in talking about this game.
So when you get to the end of the first world, you get to a castle, and inside the castle there is a king. And the king's been turned into a creature. And apparently his magic wand has been taken, and he's been kind of... turned into this creature by one of the Koopalings. So you are set out on a quest to defeat all the Koopalings in each of the lands. Like I said before, we start in Grassland, then we go to Desertland, Waterland, Giantland, Skyland, Iceland, which is funny, Pipeland, and then Darkland, which is World 8. But when you're in Pipeland, you actually find out that Princess Peach was kidnapped by Bowser himself.
Ah. He pulled one out from under us. You thought you were saving kings, and now you're saving Peach.
But it's really funny because there's additional dialogues in the game, too. So, like, if you show up to one of the castles in the frog suit, the king, like, comments that, like, oh, you've been changed, too? Like,
oh, no.
Yeah. So it's really cool that it kind of recognizes what's going on. It's kind of like a little meta.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's silly.
But
silliness is fun.
Yeah. It's just... very simple story. I don't know. I mean, there's really not much to the story in this game. If you want the entire story, you got to watch the animated television series.
Yeah, I remember seeing this on TV as a kid. Because at several points in this episode, we've been like, which is better? Here's a question for you, Josh. Which is better, the Super Mario Brothers 3 animated series or the Super Mario Brothers Super Show?
Oh. I would probably say the Super Show.
Okay.
I love Captain Lou.
And the guy who played Luigi.
Yeah.
Whoever that was.
And you had the iconic Toad voice.
Every Toad voice is iconic. Let's but yeah, I know what you mean.
You had the Mario dance.
Do the Mario. But yeah, Josh, let's, I feel like we can't talk about the story without talking about something that's been a point of fan theorization for years regarding this game. And I'm sure many people have probably talked about this already, but let's just ask the important question. Is this game actually a stage play that Mario and his friends are putting on?
It, I mean, all signs are pointing to it.
Yeah.
Coming down to the opening with the curtain going up, and then at the end with the curtain coming down. Mm-hmm. And the big thank you on it and stuff. Mm-hmm. The fact that if you go up onto like white blocks and hold down for like 3 to 5 seconds, you can actually fall behind the panels and then run backstage.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it's all those little subtle nods. There's never been anything that's like confirmed that it actually is a play, but I mean, all signs are really showing that it is. Like,
well, here's a question. Who is this play for?
Well,
and if Bowser is a willing participant in the play, does that just lend further idea to the fact that Bowser is maybe not a bad guy?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Are they making a play of the first game?
Ooh. Ooh, so wait a minute.
Because think about it, the first game was Koopa. This is Bowser.
What if this game is set hundreds of years in the future of the Mushroom Kingdom? And, like, Mario and the original princess and all of those heroes and villains are actually long dead. And this is a new generation putting on a play of what they've come to believe that adventure was. You know, like, this is the story of the mysterious plumber who saved our kingdom hundreds of years ago. But, like, you know how stories get passed down, things get added onto them?
Well, think about it. Like, the original Mario, the original Peach, the original Toad, they could be, like, hieroglyphics.
It's like they were, like, found in caves.
Look at the art style to them compared to the art style of the Mario in this one.
So they were just like chiseled on walls in blocky 8-bit form. And then years later, little toads went into caves and found them and were like, wow. And then yeah. Like, let's write a play.
I mean, think about it.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. So do you think that this play was a box office success in the Mushroom Kingdom?
I believe it was.
You don't think it was like a Spider-Man turn off the dark, big hoopla disaster? Well, because I mean there's live airships in this play, like that's probably a huge production budget.
That is true. I mean, in our world it sold 17 million copies.
So 17 million tickets.
So
you think they probably overcharged? I don't know, Broadway tickets are usually expensive.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm probably never seeing Hamilton, so you know,
that's true. As of 2011, Mario Brothers 3 remained the highest grossing non-bundled home video game to date at $1.7 billion, adjusted for inflation.
As of what year?
2011.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, some things have happened since then.
Yeah. No, as I said, 2011.
Oh, wow.
But that was adjusted for inflation as well. Okay. So,
dang.
That's a lot of money for...
It's a lot of bread.
A sequel. Sequels usually don't do too great.
No.
In gaming.
How many Tonys do you think the play won?
Well, how many Toadies?
Oh! Is there like a Neil Toadstool Harris who hosts the Mushroom Kingdom Tonys and stars in How I Met Your Princess?
Which, speaking of, to kind of go off of it being kind of a play.
Yeah.
When you save Princess Peach at the end, you run up to her and she says, "Thank you, but your princess is in another castle." Dot, dot, dot. Ha ha.
So just she's meta. Kidding. She just broke the fourth wall. So she... Yeah. Oh my gosh. So, wait a minute. Is the Mushroom Kingdom version of Hamilton really about Luigi? Is it all about Luigi and his rise to power? Yo, Nintendo, please make a game about Broadway shows in the Mushroom Kingdom. I will buy all the copies. I guess it's a fun theory. I usually can be a grump about fan theories, but like even talking about it right now, it's like, oh, this is charming.
I mean, you look at it, there's a lot of signs that point that this is pretty much probably a play. But I like that we kind of just went off on a huge tangent. Like we just went like completely, you know, out of left field and just kept going.
But I guess that is the magic of this game, in that it's got so much charm and just creative choices to it. That, like, even though I'm sitting here and I'm saying I think it's maybe a little overhyped, I still think it's fine. It's good. It's a good thing that brings out a lot of good qualities in the Mario series. And, you know, it's like, it's a testament to, like, even when Nintendo makes a game that I think is, like, just fine, it's like, oh, it's this culture-defining, benchmark-setting piece of work that everyone talks about forever, you know? So, you know, good for them.
Yeah, even the mainstay Mario games are good games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of people crap on Mario 2.
Which I will fight them all.
Right, and a lot of people crap on Sunshine.
Which I will fight them all.
Yeah, exactly. I will fight them all as well. Like, but they're still good games. Even the new Super Mario Brothers games that came out. I mean, the ones that came out for the 3DS.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're still good games. Side-scrolling Mario games, 3D Mario games, except for one, are good games.
The only one that I would probably poop on and not fight anyone over is New Super Mario Brothers 2.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's like, just collect coins. Just, that's all you're doing. Get more. Oh, you have some coins? Get some more.
Yeah, New Super Mario Brothers 2 is, I mean, that was just the whole idea, was just get coins. But I don't know. Super Mario 64 is still the worst.
No.
But I do want to talk about really quick. There's, like, I recently discovered by doing some more research on this game that there's actually other secrets in this game that I haven't even found before, and I feel stupid just not looking for them or not, like, finding them over the years and years and years that I've played this game.
Okay.
That, you know, you have the regular mushroom houses in the game.
Yeah.
So there's actually white mushroom houses and white treasure ships in the game too that you can get. But in order to do it, there's a specific guideline that you need to follow in order for them to appear. But, like, it's a battleship. Like, the one is a battleship that's just filled with coins that you can constantly just keep going through and picking up.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty cool.
So, like, for instance, if you wanted to get into one of the white treasure ships in the game,
mm-hmm.
you need to end a stage with an even number on the clock. Your coins must be a multiple of 11. So 11, 22, 33, 44. The tens digit in your score must be the multiple of 11 that corresponds with your coins.
Ugh.
And you must be in world 1, 3, 5, and 6. How crazy are those guidelines to do that?
It's ridiculous. Like, it reminds me of Eevee training in Pokemon. It's so overwhelming that I'm like, I don't want to try it because I feel like I'll mess it up, or I don't know.
Yeah. And just for something to get some more coins.
And who found that? Like, how does it take... How many years, like, what year was that discovered in?
Yeah, the article that I found was from 2008, okay. So I don't know if it's, I mean, that's 11 years ago.
It's a testament to the lifespan that iconic games like this have, that people will continue to play them decades later and find new things, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy just reading when people find, like, glitches or, like, hidden things that, like, never were discovered. Like, recently, I mean, a couple years ago it happened, but the happy birthday thing in Halo Combat Evolved, the one game designer left for his daughter or his wife or something like that, was hidden. And that was just really cool too. But like when people just put so much time into it to be like, yeah, there's something hidden in here that we're not going to tell you about. Like, you're going to figure it out yourself. And then this person found it almost 20 years later. Like, it's crazy. So let's try to right this ship and come to a conclusion here, Tom.
Right this airship, you mean?
Yeah. Well, don't die because it's going to move around on you.
Ah, cannonballs. Ba-bombs.
What's your overall? I know we talked about it a little bit, but kind of summarize what's your overall take on Mario 3.
There are better Mario side-scrolling adventures, even better ones on the NES, but this game is an important piece of history, and it is absolutely worth a playthrough. It just depends what your interest and patience levels are, but it's something that should be on your bucket list. It's like watching Citizen Kane. A lot of people think Citizen Kane's overhyped. I don't think it's that overhyped. I don't think it deserves to be number one, though. But, you know, it's like, it's one of those pieces of an art form that's so important that you should definitely be giving it a try and forming your own opinions on it.
Do you understand, though, why people would still constantly put it in the top 10 of greatest games of all time?
Greatest games overall of all time?
Yeah.
Well, if we're putting it like that, no, I don't understand why people would do that. Like, if you're looking for influential Mario side scrollers to put in there, I would put World, or even just the first one. Like, I don't know.
Would you put it in top 10 NES games?
It's a question that requires more formulation than I can do right now.
Huh. Because like I said, I grew up playing this game a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I remember getting this game when I was younger, and like, I played this game a lot. So like, I can understand why. And it is really interesting to see, you know, your point of view on this, because like I said, you kind of just stepped into it a couple weeks ago to start playing this. Like, mm-hmm. I started it yesterday and I beat it this morning. Like, I just kind of just went right along with it. Cause it's like muscle memory of these stages of how to just get from point A to point B on it. Skyland, Pipeland, and Darkland are probably some of the hardest and most frustrating levels in Mario that I can remember playing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I understand, and I will say this is the second best Mario game. I think Mario World is still the best Mario game ever made.
we're getting into our like asterisks, you know, like splitting hairs thing a little bit here, but like, no. See, that's the thing for me when it comes down to it, is just that like, I hold all of the side-scrolling Mario games to the standard of World, you know, and for me, this just came up short. And, you know, maybe that's a lame argument, because it's like, well, of course, World's better. It expanded on this, and you have to appreciate this because you wouldn't have had World. But, like, I don't know. Like,
but you can see a lot of Mario 3's influences in Super Mario World.
Oh, you can. Absolutely.
And everything from, like you said, sliding down hills to flying to, you know, different suits and different power-ups and stuff. Riding Yoshi is like riding the shoe. Like, it's just,
it's important. Like, I will not deny that. It should be played because it's important. And if you are the kind of person who's like a purist about gaming history, I think you would be disingenuous if you hadn't experienced this.
I will add a little asterisk to what you're saying, though. If you're going to play Super Mario Brothers 3, play it on the Super Nintendo, a part of the Mario All-Stars pack.
So what changes does that make to this? Because
It just makes it look better.
It's just graphic changes?
Yeah, mainly. There's no like changes to the game itself. They just improve the graphics. I still think Mario All-Stars Pack is the greatest HD remake ever made.
The greatest SD HD remake?
But if you think about it, though, like, they redid the graphics to Mario 1, Mario 2, Mario 3, and they added Mario World to the later release of it. They just updated graphics to be able to run on a Super Nintendo. So like, you almost get that Super Mario World graphic style in those first original three games. And then they released it on the Wii, and it's even better. Like, it's the same. It's just so good. It's so much better. But at the same time, that's the reason why we have HD remakes constantly being pumped out. So if you want to play the best version of it, definitely play it on the Mario All-Stars pack on the Super Nintendo or on the Wii. It's going to be the best way to play this game overall.
Okay. Well, if I can ever get a hold of that, I will give it another go around on that and tell you what I think.
Just graphically, it just looks more just aesthetically pleasing.
Okay. Cool.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.